Welcome to the party, baby.
What we're gonna do right here is go back.
I can feel it coming in the air tonight. Oh Lord.
With the 12th pick in the first round,
and I've been waiting
Tampa
for
Bay selects defensive tackle, University of Miami, Warren Sapp.
Oh Lord.
Here we go, Nana. Ah!
Why you get up early in the morning, right here. Go ball.
We were together for so many years and had dug and went and tried and failed and got ourselves to a position of where we knew we had a shot to win a championship and it was going to take everybody.
It makes you so proud, you know, that people appreciate your work.
Trainees to the Pro Football Hall of Fame. They are Larry Allen, Chris Carter, Curly Culp, Jonathan Ogden, Bill Parcells, Dave Robinson, and Warren Sapp.
You play this game for the love and respect of your teammates and the guys that you played against. It's just a culmination of a lot of hard work and I made it.
Good afternoon, and thank you for being here as I introduce the fifth person to be inducted into the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Ring of Honor. This year's selection will be honored in a halftime ceremony during our November 11th game against the Miami Dolphins on Monday Night Football. Four pillars of the Buccaneers have their name in the Ring of Honor: Leroy Selman, John McKay, Jimmy Giles, Paul Gruber. And the newest member to join them, Warren Sapp. When you really think about it, there was no other choice. We knew he was going to be up there at some point, but on February 2nd of this year, he earned his spot. On that great day, Warren Sapp became the second Buccaneer to be voted into the Pro Football Hall of Fame. During his spectacular career, Warren never once gave less than his all. His days on the field were headlined by incredible passion, overwhelming talent, and of course, his larger-than-life personality. His accolades and statistics speak for themselves. He's a 7-time Pro Bowler, 6-time All-Pro, NFL Defensive Player of the Year, and was selected to the NFL's All-Decade Team in 2 different decades. In his career, he had 96.5 sacks, the second most ever by an interior lineman, 20 forced fumbles, 12 fumble recoveries, and as he's very quick to tell you, he caught 2 touchdown passes. My family feels a very special connection to Warren because, as you know, 1995 was the year we purchased the team. At our first draft, in our first war room, Warren Sapp was the first player drafted under our watch. The second one that day was pretty good also, but we'll save that speech for another day. We had the pleasure of watching Warren come in the door as a 22-year-old from Plymouth, Florida, and then growing to become one of the greatest players the game has ever seen. Perhaps even more important than what you read in the papers or saw on the playing field was Warren's intense devotion and leadership. He did not accept losing and did not let anyone around him do less than their best. It is no coincidence that Warren joined a Tampa Bay team that had suffered through 12 consecutive losing seasons. And then, by his third year, was appearing in the postseason. And over the next 7 seasons, we never had a losing record and would make the playoffs 6 times, culminating in that magical night in San Diego when we hoisted the Vince Lombardi Trophy as world champions. Warren is truly one of our franchise's most iconic players, and we are thrilled to have him join the Tampa Bay Buccaneers Ring of Honor. Ladies and gentlemen, Mr. Warren Sapp.
You know, Marshall told me when he went in the Hall of Fame, it'll be days when people say stuff about you that they only say about dead people. And I guess that was one of those times right there when, you know, this little boy from Plymouth, Florida is standing before you right now, very humble and very honored. And I'm looking at the man that set me on this path right now, and Mr. Dungey, and I'm looking at my mother and my aunt and my uncle and all my people in this room, and damn, it feels good. I mean, I'm itching right now. I mean, it's unbelievable. I mean, to join Jimmy, Paul, Gruber, Coach, and the other Hall of Famer, God bless his soul, I couldn't dream of it. You know, when Tony sat me and Brooks in the room and told us, you chase Joe Green and you chase Jack Ham. I said, what does that mean? He said, well, Joe Green has 10 straight Pro Bowls, 2 Defensive Player of the Year, and 4 World Championships. I said, whoa, that's a lot of work there. He said, well, you got to go to work on it. So I went to work on it, and Brooks went to work on his. And the thing about it is we were 2 Florida boys. And if you know anything about Florida boys, we wear a chip on our shoulders. And we walked into this place, and the thing that you didn't say, boss, it was 11 straight double-digit loss seasons that when I walked in this place. And then went 7-9 with Sam, 5-2 and 2-7. There's nothing like it. And then Tony come in and he gave us the structure. And I remember the third day having Rob Marinelli and we was going through those bag drills, Squall. And Eric Curry looked back at him and said, we going to do this every day? And he said, yep. And I said, oh, boy, this is going to be real good because we're going to weed out a lot of people who don't want to play football around here because there's some hot days in Tampa. So, and we set about it on a day-in, day-out basis. And, you know, as I look around this room and I see Ann Beckles and Tony Mayberry, and my first roommate in this place was Hardy Nickerson. And if you know anything about Hardwell, you knew exactly what it was to be around him. And that's why when I became the leader of this team or assumed that role or that mantle, I wasn't going to allow it to drop off because Hardy wouldn't let me drop off when I was his roommate. And it was Hardy, Lonnie Martz, Thomas Everett, Barney Bussey, Martin Mayhew, Slim Dim, that core group, you know what I'm saying? That old Henry group of guys that understood that you came to work to work. And there was a time and place for everything. And 96, we come around and we dressed. And I remember that bus trip to Jacksonville. And if you were on that bus that day with us, it was a hard run. We went all the way to Jacksonville, had two practices, and turned around, came back. I still remember that like yesterday, T.D. And it was going to be a hard group of men that was going to go about this championship that we were looking for. And I remember like yesterday, me and Brooks laying in the bed. We was 1-7 the first 8 games. The happiest 1-7 team I've ever been a part of. 1 win in 8 games. But we go out to San Diego, and the second half starts. And we turn on the television, and ESPN's on, and Berman call us the Yucks. I looked at Brooks. I said, Brooks, that would be the last time they disrespect us, boss. We're going to go about this in a real, real nasty manner because we got the man that's going to lead us, and we're going to do exactly what he's talking about, so let's go do it. And oh, my goodness. So we took off from that point, and next year we got WD-40, Mike in the backfield, Warwick in the backfield, and we going. Faking it to Warwick, throwing it to Mike. Fake it to Mike, throw it to Mike. Tampa pass, I think we called it at some point. And hey, man. I stand before y'all today, and I just want to say thank you to everybody that had anything to do with it, anything that put up with my wildness and that overlarge personality and that big old mouth of mine and the mouth that roared, but the city of Tampa loved it. And what made this place so special was the people in the stands, you know, because I remember the old stadium. 3rd and 10, they get quiet when the quarterback was audible. I couldn't believe it. We in our stands, me and Steve. We audible and they're getting quiet, like, let's listen to the quarterback. No, turn into a frenzy. Then a couple of years later, we got a frenzy going. We got 200,000 people on a waiting list ready to go, and there's no better place to play football. Raymond James was so nice, I named it twice. Raymond James North, that's what we call the Georgia Dome. Because a couple of our rowdy friends would travel with us, and we'd take it over. And it was just beautiful. And as I just sit here and think about all those times, and this man John Clark right here, was the first person that told me Raymond James was my house and it's the house that Sapp built. I used to always think that was kind of crazy. It's a beautiful thing. And I just think about all the teammates and all the fans that walked in and out of that place. And because Tampa was a place, they said, where careers came to die. That's a lie. Tampa's a destination. Tampa's a place where champions live. And we all did it together, no doubt about it. I mean, from the ugly orange to that beautiful pewter. I wouldn't trade a day in any other uniform in any other place in the world. Tampa's my home, and I love it. And I just want to say thank you, because there's not much more I can say. Thank you.
The only way to keep a secret in this building is not to tell anybody. And so I have one more thing I want to add that nobody knows about today. And it's not in the press releases. It's not in anything you have today. But on November 11th of this year, under the lights of Monday Night Football, not only will we be putting Warren Sapp's name in the Ring of Honor, but we will also be telling the world that no one else will ever wear the number 99 for this team ever again.
Questions. Now, to have your name up there beside Coca-Cola and Hess is pretty good. You can have that number, but that SAPP will hang over you. And ooh. I mean, I'm sitting here thinking, like, the bowl games that come through, the monster truck events, is that going to be on the wall? Yes. That's crazy. Nothing to explain that. I mean, you walk into every stadium, and I remember looking up at, you know, and looking at Chris Hinton's name, because I think about it every year, because I go to the combine every year, and it makes my story about him beating the hell out of me in a football game even more the better, because I had to choose between Chris Hinton and Randall McDaniel. And if you know anything about football, you don't choose Randall McDaniel, but I didn't know that Chris Hinton was that violent and, you know, going to beat me up and talk bad to me, so I said, if I'm going to get beat, at least I'm not going to be chastised like a child. So I went over to Randall McDaniel's side. So when I walked into it and I saw Chris Hinton, I said, that means something. So, I mean, it's unbelievable.
First of all, this has been one heck of a year, Ring of Honor, Hall of Fame. Is there a point in your career, a defining moment, that you knew that this was a distinct possibility?
No. Every day that you play this game, you play it one day at a time, one play at a time. And at no point, you know. You want to put together a string of years together, and you never think about what will be at the end, because the only thing I ever played for was respect to my teammates and my peers and the people that coach with me and against me. If you were picking a football team and you were picking a defense and you came to your under tackle or your defensive tackle position, I wanted you to save me. And the only way I could do that was go out and put it on the field, because no matter how loud or how boisterous I was with what I said in those locker rooms with you guys, I still had to go put it on the field. There was nothing else that was going to define me. The eye in the sky would never lie.
Warren, I know that Derek said when you got the word that you were going into Canton, he was in New Orleans, he was in these cowboy boots, he ran, he walked, he ran. Have you talked to him and about getting this?
He should be somewhere in here. Unless he's watching film over there with the Tampa Bay Storm. I'm not happy with you, Brooks. He's next. I mean, his is right behind me. I mean, when I got the word, and thank Ira again for the beautiful presentation, no doubt, he was there on the stage with me, and me and him embraced, and I mean, we've been together since we was on the Florida Georgia team together as 17-year-old kids coming out of high school. So, and then play each other in college. I mean, I go to Florida State and I sleep in his room the first time Miami Florida State played a Rite Right game because I was redshirted. Yeah, crazy, I know. So me and him shared so many moments that we're gonna keep sharing the rest of our lives, and his bus should be coming. And I'm sure they're gonna put him right there. Come on. Hey, 5-5 and 9-9 go together forever, baby. Hey. The 12th and the 28th pick in the draft in 1995, first two picks. I mean, we did, 18 straight Pro Bowls or something like that? I mean, we're two pretty good players, no doubt about it.
Warren, they're going to do this on a Monday night game against Miami at Raymond James. You were part of a lot of those Monday night national TV, a lot of playoff games. It seemed like you always rose to the top. You enjoyed the spotlight more maybe than any other player around. Do you talk about just, you know, what that means to you, what Monday night was like at Raymond James so many years?
You remember when we was digging in to get the first one? We got it. In the middle. I mean, when that schedule came out, it was time for Tampa to show the world that, you know, this one where careers came to die. We thriving now. It's going to be a championship as it comes through here at some point. So just all comes together. I mean, just has a way of working. But here's the funny part, Rick. And if anybody follows me on Twitter, they already know this. I tweet 11-11 all the time. I mean, that's like something my sister taught me when I was a little kid. You see 11-11 on the clock, you rub it and make a wish. My room in college, my junior year, my last year at Miami at the hotel before we played games at the Orange Bowl was 11-11. 11-11. So it's kind of full circle for me. I'm a numbers guy, a nut. Here it is. What are you going to do about it, man? I didn't do it. Here it is, May the 2nd. Then it was February the 2nd. What are you going to do about it, man? I'm just here. I'm just here alone for the ride. Somebody else is preordained this, so I'm just enjoying it.
Warren, I know you didn't lack confidence coming out of UM, but was there a particular game, maybe the first couple of seasons, Warren, where you said to yourself, I can be a dominant player in the NFL?
I go back to his first win. It was Minnesota, 24-13. We was at the house, and
Warren Moon was the quarterback, and we were going out. I mean, it was just one of those games. Melvin picked him off late in the year. I mean, it was our first win underneath him, and we were being taught how to win. I mean, from the very basics of here's your gap, you spill that, you turn it back, you know, here comes the free hit. And we were being taught the game like children, being fed applesauce. And then at a point, we would get to have Whole Foods and get a little meat and a little chicken, you know, the grains and everything. But we were being fed this game from the bottom up. And once we understood what he wanted from us, we played some pretty good football. No doubt about that. But, I mean, everything comes together, you know. We all got our championships. That's the best part about it. If anybody wondering, Shaquille O'Neal inspired my outfit today. Anybody seen him last night looking like Easter on TV? All right, no more questions. Then we'll get out of here. Love you back. Thank you, boss.